Talk Show.
Recorded live.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here with William Fink for another installation of Christogenos, which means the genealogy or the line of descent of Jesus Christ, Yahshua Messiah, who is, of course, an Adamite, not a Jew. And with tonight, we're going to be doing episode 3 of our series on two seed line in the New Testament. And we started the first two episodes of Matthew chapters 1 through 4. And this evening, we're going to be discussing Matthew chapter 5 and possibly, you know, getting into Matthew chapter 6 and 7 as well. But I have a feeling that Matthew chapter 5 is going to take up most of the show tonight because it is such a crucial chapter in understanding, number one, the exclusivist message of Christian Israel, that is, that we, the Caucasian people, Anglo-Saxon Israel, are the Israelites of the Bible, and the Jews are not. The Jews are imposters, and that this Bible was written to, by, for, and about Israelites, that is, Caucasian Israelites, and nobody else. There's nobody else who can be included under the covenants, under the auspices of being an heir to the covenants and the promises of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, etc. Do you not agree with that assessment, William Fink?
Absolutely. We're going to see this Sermon on the Mount. This message is aimed at a particular group of people and nobody else.
Okay. All right.
It's very plain once it's examined.
Yes.
You can't take this message and apply it to anybody else.
Okay. All right. So let's just jump right into Matthew chapter 5. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. Now, obviously, when Yahshua was addressing multitudes, he was speaking to a mixed bag of people, and not all of them were Israelites. Some of them were, in fact, Jews who are Edomites, not Israelites, and others were people wandering through the territory, possibly even neither Jew nor Israelite, but some other group of people who were curious and heard about Jesus Christ and wondered who he was and wanted to get a look-see. And therefore, he spoke in parables. Now, why did he speak in parables?
Well, clearly so that not everybody could understand him.
Right. That only yes.
Many members of the audience would be lost, would remain oblivious to what was being said.
Yes. Yeah, and even if they didn't really get the message, or some people, when you tell a joke, they don't always get the joke, but nevertheless, they laugh anyway. Okay? And so, in this case, when he spoke in parables, didn't he say in Matthew chapter 13 that the reason I speak in parables is so that you Israelites will understand, but none of these other people should understand?
You know, I believe he says that even sooner in Matthew chapter 7, I think.
Okay, all right.
It's definitely in 13, but I believe it's as early as Matthew chapter 7.
Yes, so this gospel is not for everybody in the whole world. It's only intended for certain people. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely.
That's right.
And Matthew 5 is going to demonstrate that.
Okay, all right, so let's continue here. He went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." What does this expression, poor in spirit, mean?
Well, I'm going to say so. A lot of people think that the message of the Sermon on the Mount is a forgiving, kind God who is nice and graceful to everybody.
Okay.
And that the God of the Old Testament is mean and cruel and warlike.
Okay.
And that's not the difference here.
Okay.
The difference here is that the warlike, mean, cruel God of the Old Testament, Yahweh, the war God, he is making war with the other races.
That's right.
The Canaanites, the Kenites, the Rephaim, all the mingled people.
Yes.
And that is why he is mean and cruel.
Right.
But the kind, peaceful, gentle God of the New Testament, he is giving a message specifically for the children of Israel.
Okay.
And setting an example of how they should act towards each other.
Yes, Yes, in their own communities, living neighbor, door to door, et cetera, right?
Right, and yes. And what I'm saying is that the difference is not that this is a different God, as many mainstream commentators state.
That's right.
The difference is not that this is a different time, as many or God changed his mind somehow.
Yes, right.
The difference is that in the Old Testament, the message of war and hatred is geared towards the non-Israelite races.
Right. Well, that's a very interesting point, namely that in the Old Testament, the Israelites were always being attacked by some other race, okay, or by some other mixed race. And as a result, Yahweh, our Father, you know, stressed to the Israelites, you must defend yourself against these outside enemies. Isn't that what the Old Testament continually stresses? Why, isn't that why the Israelites had war after war after war?
Absolutely. But one of the things, the second half of my point here is that the same commentators who try to sell us on this two-God changed personality theory,
yes.
Okay.
Schizophrenic Yahweh.
Right, absolutely.
Right. Uh-huh.
They also try to say that this message of humility is unique to the New Testament. Or novel to the New Testament.
Oh, no, it's not.
And that's absolutely a lie.
Right.
Because Leviticus 26:41 says, and that I also have walked contrary unto them and have brought them unto the land of their enemies. If then their uncircumcised hearts be humble.
Right.
And then they accept of the punishment of their iniquity.
Yes.
Then I will remember my covenant with Jacob.
Right. Right.
Now,
right.
Now that message is in Chronicles 7:14. If my people, to Chronicles 7:14, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways,
yes,
then I will hear from heaven.
Right, right.
And the obvious point here is that, you know, the Christian identity message isn't about white supremacy. It's about God's supremacy.
That's right. Well, actually, not even supremacism, but separatism. But he has
But I mean, we have to humble ourselves and realize that God is supreme.
Oh, of course, of course.
And that's that's the message that's being given here.
You'll never make a rabbi, Bill.
and that's what. Well, the rabbis elevate themselves above God.
That's right.
And they still do to this day.
That's right.
And Paul's words in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Have rung true
in
the last 2,000 years.
Yes, that's one of the most cogent prophecies uttered by anybody in the New Testament. Yes, absolutely. So poor in spirit, so what we're talking about here in the New Testament, the context here is the relations between blood brothers, namely Israelites living among each other, and how we are supposed to regard each other. And this is not about Israelites versus Canaanites or Israelites versus blacks, or this is about Israelites living among themselves and how we are supposed to act toward each other, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And when we get to about the middle of chapter 5, we're going to see that that's absolutely evident. The cultural context of this entire message insists that it's only for the children of Israel.
Right. Okay, so this expression, poor in spirit, means you humble yourself before the kingdom, right? In other words, you lower yourself, your ego, you put your ego in second place, and you put the kingdom first, right?
Well, right. You humble yourself before God.
Yes.
You have humility, and you don't inflate yourselves against your brethren.
That's right. That's right. Okay, and then we'll come across this later, because this is stressed several times in chapter 5. Verse 4, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Okay, that was pretty obvious, right?
Well, Matthew 9:15, and Yahshua said to them, can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them?
Yes.
But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken from them,
mm-hmm.
and then they shall fast.
Yeah, so in other words, those who know what they're missing, they are truly mourning, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I would cite John 16:20 in relation to this verse.
Okay.
Verily, verily, I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice,
yes.
and you shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall be turned into joy. A woman, when she is in travail, has sorrow, because her hour has come.
Yes.
But as soon as she is delivered of the child, She remembers no more the anguish for joy that a man is brought into the world.
Well, the name of the game today is parte harte. The whole world is partying, isn't it? And we're the ones who are mourning.
They're all partying with the devil.
That's right. And we're mourning because we know it's all evil, and we're waiting for the day for Yahshua's return to turn this around finally. Come quickly, Lord Jesus, please, please.
Well, right, to remove the evil, to turn our children back to what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, we're the only ones who seem to understand that it's all evil. Everyone else is partying. They think this is all just fine.
Oh, yeah, they think that what they're doing is right.
That's right, exactly. They just don't get it. We're the ones who are the weirdos. We're the weirdos. But yet, they're having a good old time, but the whole thing is coming crashing on their heads real quickly.
The American educational system turns out nothing but drones for the New World Order.
That's right. Okay, verse 5, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. This is a beautiful passage. Coming from Psalm 37:11, and of course, meek here doesn't mean a wuss.
And it's not only Psalm 37:11; it's Psalm 22:26, Psalm 25:9, Psalm 69:32, Psalm 147, Psalm 149, and Isaiah 11:4.
Okay.
All make the same exact reference.
Yes.
And Isaiah 11:4 states, "But with righteousness shall he judge the poor,
right,
and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth."
So, in other words, we should humble ourselves and not puff ourselves up, which is the expression Paul uses. We should not puff ourselves up because we happen to be better off than one of our fellow Israelites. We should always be equitable and just and fair toward everybody, no matter what our status in society, right? Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Well, right, but when you examine... I've been fortunate in my life to see American society in all of its aspects. From the middle American Protestant to the New York. I dwelt amongst the New York Jews for all my life, but I know a lot of people from the heartland also. And what I'm trying to say is that when you go into the real America, the rural middle America, if you want to call it, or as the Jews would say, the flyover country.
Right.
You meet the most humble, most kind people that I could ever imagine.
Right.
But when you go to Fifth Avenue or to the Diamond District or down to the Garment District in New York, you meet proud, boisterous, loud
Jews. That's
the way they are. And that's why they have such a disproportionate political voice.
That's right.
They're in the boasting and self-elevation. That's how they naturally are.
Yeah, chutzpah and, plus money equals power. Right.
Right. And most true Saxon Israelite people are actually humble, meek people.
That's right. That's very right. Okay. So verse 6, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Please. Let us be filled. It's taking such a long time for righteousness to make its presence felt in this world, isn't it?
Well, that's absolutely true, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Right. Well, because the judgment day will fulfill us eventually. We will be filled eventually, but not in this current situation. Okay? Verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Because, if you are merciful toward others, then Yahweh will be merciful toward you. Isn't that what the law clearly says?
Well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that mercy is, Hosea 2:23, and I will sow her unto me in the earth, mm-hmm. and I will have mercy upon her that has not obtained mercy,
yes.
and I will say to them which are my people, thou art my people. And that's the story of the Old Testament that mercy would only come to the children of Israel, but the New Testament, the message of the New Covenant is that we're to be merciful of our brethren.
Right.
And that is the message here in Matthew chapter 5.
Right. And so those of us who are capable of exhibiting mercy toward our brethren, therefore we will hopefully raise those up who are unable to do so, those who are still arrogant and too proud, for example, because we've often talked about the white makes right movement, and of course that's not sufficient. You have to humble yourself before Yahweh and to be a true Israelite. White is not good enough. Is that the case?
Well, absolutely. And the cultural context here is that the Pharisees and the leadership, the subculture in Judea,
okay,
in Jerusalem, they stressed the rituals of the law and the judgments of the law.
Yes.
Whereas Yahshua Christ stresses the idea of mercy and not judging your brother so quickly, because you yourself are full of fault.
Right, right. And therefore, that's why we should be humble, because each one of us in our heart of hearts knows that we're not perfect, and therefore we're really not qualified to be a judge over others. However, when an injustice is done by one person toward another, it's not right for us to remain silent. We have to make sure that injustice does not occur in the world. Isn't that what we're here for?
Well, right, and it's one thing to judge according to the law.
Yes.
In other words, if you run over my goat,
yeah,
and I say, hey, you have to give me $500, and you don't have $500, so I take you to the judge.
Yeah.
And I make the judge passes down a decree according to the law, and you have to give me your car.
Yeah.
So now you're without a car.
Right.
And now you can't make a living.
Yes.
Well, it's one thing to do that, and it's another thing to say, well, I understand that you need your car, and I have another goat, so just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between mercy and enforcing the judgments of the law.
Right.
There are times when we should choose mercy.
Yes. Absolutely.
That mercy is the much more noble route.
That's right. That's right. Obviously, justice needs to be done, but when the person who is unable to make good on the ruling, we give that person time to do so, okay? And, both parties learn something from the exchange, correct? Number one, if you switch shoes with the other person and your car was taken away from you so that you couldn't earn the money to pay for a goat, you'd be angry, wouldn't you? Okay.
Absolutely.
So do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Okay.
Well, that's the message.
Very good.
Was okay. Lost in the law.
Yeah. Yeah. And so each one of us is being told here to practice mercy, to be merciful toward our brethren. Verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. What is this pure in heart business?
Well, I think that you can only be pure in heart if you're pure in genes.
Okay. Okay.
And that's, we'd have to go outside of Matthew 5 to demonstrate that. That message isn't a part of the Matthew chapter 5 message.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But how could you be pure in heart without being one of Yahweh's original creations? Can a bastard be pure in heart? That's the question.
Right, right. Certainly not. Certainly not. And the other races may try, but it's not their place to be the city on the hill, which we Israelites have been ordained to be, to set the national example of righteousness. The other races simply can't do it. They've never demonstrated that ability. And every time they try, they just make a mess of it. Okay. Let me switch to John chapter 1, because the word guileless comes to mind here, because pure in heart and guileless are pretty much the same idea, that a person has no guile or no animosity toward anybody, okay? And that's how an Israelite is supposed to be. So John 1, verses 45 through 51, I'm going to quote here. Philip finds Nathanael and says to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And Nathanael said to him, "Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth?" Philip says to him, "Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and says of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. Nathanael says to him, from where know you me? Jesus answered and said to him, before that Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Nathanael answered and says to him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said to him, because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, believe you? You shall see greater things than these. And he says to him, verily, verily, I say to you, hereafter you shall see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. So it's very important to be guileless.
Well, absolutely. I'm going to refer to Psalm 73:1. Truly, Yahweh is good to Israel, even to such as are of a clean heart.
Mm-hmm.
And Ezekiel 36:25. Then I will sprinkle water upon you, meaning the children of Israel.
Yes.
And ye shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you.
Yes.
And this new heart and this new spirit is the message of the New Testament.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you can't have a pure heart without accepting
yeah.
first.
And
your heart has to be pure in the eyes of Yahweh and not in your own eyes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay?
And
to be pure in the eyes of Yahweh, what do you have to do?
Yeah.
Well, Yahshua Christ said, no man comes to the Father except through me.
That's right. That's
and he
right.
only came for the sheep.
That's right. And there's nothing in the Old Testament that even remotely suggests that non-Israelites will be subject to these covenants and promises. And therefore, the New Testament is no different. The New Testament is absolutely no different, despite the claims of Judeo-Christians today. Okay? All right, verse 9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God.
And
blessed
he's talking again about the peacemakers amongst the children of Israel.
That's right. That's right. Okay? And this will become clearer as we get into the rest of this chapter. Verse 10. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Of heaven. Now, righteousness, of course, in modern jargon is justice. Those of us who believe in the concept of justice, that if you have been falsely accused or falsely judged or someone does an injustice toward you, that justice must be done.
Well, right, but again, this righteousness is the righteousness of God and not the righteousness of man.
Right, right.
What we see as What people think is right often is not right.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's a crucial difference between righteousness and self-righteousness, and the modern world simply doesn't seem to understand that there's a difference between these two.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in reference to this verse, in verse 11, blessed are you when they would reproach and persecute you, and being liars, they would speak evil against any of you on account of me.
Right, right, yeah.
And this is, Psalm 37:12, the wicked plotteth against the just.
Right.
And gnasheth upon him with his teeth.
Yes.
That this, who are they?
Yes.
That they are, in this message, those who are outside of this message.
Right. That's right.
The people that he didn't want to understand.
Yes. Well, here in my King James Version here, the word men is inserted. It's in italics. So they decided to insert this word men. And, of course, it does not mean necessarily Adamites, okay, because typically it's the Jews who are reviling us and falsely accusing us of all types of sins according to their system of religion, okay, and accusing us because we follow Yahshua Messiah. Isn't that what the Jews always do to us?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're persecuted just for obeying
right.
the Bible and obeying the gospel.
Exactly.
People that don't believe in race mixing are persecuted as being evil.
Yes, yes. And because we oppose race mixing in his name, therefore we are hated by them and also by all of the apostate Christians on the planet as well.
Right. And Luke's Luke's recording of this message is a little different than Matthew's.
Okay.
And there's no fault in that. I could talk about that. It's just a different different hearer will remember words differently that were important to him and record them differently. That's the way it is. They didn't have stenography back in this day. They didn't have tape recorders.
Right.
And they couldn't quote verbatim from long, lengthy speeches.
Yeah, even so, they corroborate each other much better than modern witnesses in a courtroom.
Well, absolutely. That's absolutely true. And it's not that everything in either gospel was not spoken. It's just that some things were not recorded by either gospel.
Yes.
Or you know, weren't recorded. In other words, if you had 500 statements and I listened to them and somebody else listened to them and we went and wrote them down, I might get 401 and somebody else might get 480. But
yes.
But the 20 that are missing are statements that I got.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, they do corroborate each other. And generally speaking, given the horrible translations, they do not contradict each other.
Right, absolutely not. There's no contradiction whatsoever.
Yes.
I'd like to quote Luke 6:22 in reference to this passage.
Okay.
In reference to Matthew 5:10-12. And in my translation, it's, "Blessed are you when men hate you,
mm-hmm.
and when they separate from you, and they reproach you, and they cast out your name as evil because of the Son of Man."
Yes.
And that's anybody who obeys the words of Christ.
Yes.
And is not a race mixer. And is not out partying with the devil,
right.
is going to be considered in this day and age evil.
That's right.
That's just the way it is.
The world hates us.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about this. The world hates us, yes.
And it's perfectly, literally true, and mm-hmm. I experience it all the time in my own life.
Yeah, and Jesus said that don't worry about that, because before the world hated you, the world hated me. Okay.
Right. And my, you know, I have my own children think I'm evil sometimes.
Yes.
And
right.
That's just tough.
So you wear that with a badge of honor, Bill. Wear it like a badge of honor. Okay. Verse 12, and I love this one. "Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." So those of us who are preaching the true gospel, not the Judeo-Christian gospel, but the true gospel, we will get the reward, and we should rejoice and just, you know, prepare ourselves, because we're doing the right thing.
Well, and we know again from the Old Testament testimonies and from Yahshua's testimonies in Luke chapter 11 and elsewhere,
yes.
that it's the outsiders who were persecuting the prophets.
That's right.
It's the evil people that were infiltrating the kingdom that were persecuting the prophets.
Yes.
And today their descendants live in New York for the most part.
Right, exactly. New York and Tel Aviv.
Right. Yes, New York and Tel Aviv.
Yes. Okay, verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is therefore good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men." Now, isn't he talking about those Christians who have lost the true faith?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's an interesting passage in reference to this verse in Leviticus 2:13.
Okay.
"And every oblation of thy meat offering shalt thou season with salt.
Uh-huh.
Neither shalt thou suffer the salt of the covenant of thy God to be lacking from thy meat offering."
Right.
"With all thine offerings, thou shalt offer salt."
Mm-hmm.
And this, I believe, Yahshua used this metaphor in relation to that.
Yeah, because we are the salt of the earth. We're teaching the spicy. The Christian identity, despite the fact that it's hated by all of Judeo-Christianity and all of Jewry, is the salty doctrine, right?
Well, it's the only message that's even close to the wishes of Yahweh.
That's
that expresses
right.
the will of God.
That's right. And everybody else is bland. I can't remember who said Buchanan, Pat Buchanan, when he was campaigning, I think it was 96, against Gore, not Gore, who was the Republican, the lame Republican. He said he was the bland leading the bland instead of the blind leading the blind. And so what we've got here, and Jesus calls it the lukewarm church. If you be lukewarm.
And those who are lukewarm, he will spew out of his mouth.
That's right. They have no salt. They have no flavor. They're bland. They're lukewarm. They are worthless, as he says in this verse here. They're absolutely worthless. Verse 14. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Now it says a city. It doesn't say a preacher.
Or a church.
Or a church. Or a denomination. It says a city. So a city is ruled by laws. It has a mayor, okay? It has citizens. It has a city council. It's a community of Israelites. Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Well, right, but it's also, I believe, it's the race of Israel.
Yes.
Being used as a metaphorically described
right.
as a city.
Well, yeah, because it's government. We're talking, the government shall be upon his shoulders. That's what it says.
Which race brings to the earth law?
Yes.
The rule of law? Fair judgment?
Yes.
The idea that everybody is, I hate to say, because everybody misinterprets the egalitarian clause in the Declaration of Independence that every man is created equal.
Right, right.
What it means is every man is equal in the eyes of the law.
Yes.
Is what it means.
Okay. Yeah.
And that is a Christian ideal.
Sure.
That is the respective persons
right.
of James chapter 2.
Okay. Okay.
That the rich aren't supposed to get off lightly because they're rich.
Right.
And the poor be punished more severely.
Such as Michael Jackson.
Being
a pedophile and getting off because he's rich.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
And he's not rich anymore.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Verse 15. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it gives light to all that are in the house. And, of course, the true gospel will spread light, will it not?
Well, the word Beth Shemesh is a word from the Old Testament.
Okay.
And Joseph got his wife from the priest of On, which
right.
is Beth Shemesh.
Okay.
And Beth Shemesh is a double entendre.
Yes.
It can mean either house of the sun or house of the people of Shem.
Okay.
And this is not a coincidence.
Right.
The people of Shem have been the light bearers, the true light bearers.
Yes.
I mean, the Jews are the pretend light bearers.
Exactly.
Those people on behind the scenes at CNN and the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
they think they're the world's light bearers. All they really bear is darkness.
That's right.
The
light be darkness,
the
yes.
true Shemites, the Saxon and Celtic peoples of the world, they are the true light bearers.
That's right.
They are the true bringers of the will of God into the
yes.
physical realm.
Yeah, and the law and the covenants were delivered to us, not to the Jews.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. Okay, verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. Okay, we want our good works to be seen of men and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Your Father. It doesn't say their father. Okay.
Well, right. And I'm not sure if we should do good works in order that they be seen with the intent that men see them.
Yes.
But
they will be
good works that we do
right.
because we are that shining
right.
city on a hill.
Well, yes.
Men
like
can't help but see.
Yeah, like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, the Declaration of Arbroath, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. You know, these declarations by white men are liberty-inspiring. There's no other race that has produced any kind of liberty-inspiring documents. Are you aware of any?
Well, there's absolutely not.
Yeah.
But it's much more than that. It's all the world's invention and all the world's the institutions that we build. The universities and the
yes.
I mean, they started out with good intention.
Yes.
I mean, Harvard started out as a Bible college.
That's right.
Now it's a Talmud college.
That's right.
I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Well, it's Jewish money.
it happened with the
yes.
money of the Jewish capitalists and industrialists of the 19th century.
Yeah, chutzpah and money.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly, yes. Okay. Now, I'm going to read the next three together. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say to you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments, and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Are these three verses, not a total rebuke of the antinomian position, those who say that Paul teaches against the law?
Well, right. There's a lot more here than that, too, but I'll get to it in a minute.
Okay.
Yes, this is absolutely a total rebuke of the antinomian position.
Right.
The Old Testament prophesied the doing away with of the rituals,
yes,
of the law. Okay? The sacrificial rites of the law.
Right.
And that's in Daniel chapter 9. It's a matter of prophecy.
Yes.
It's very clear. And that is what Paul was talking about every time he used the phrase works of the law.
Okay.
Because if you go into the Septuagint, into the book of Numbers and the book of Leviticus, you'll see that the temple rituals are described with the Greek words ergoi ton nomon,
mm-hmm,
which is works of the law, literally,
yeah. Yes.
But it's used to describe the temple rituals.
Yes. Yes.
Paul's influence from Scripture being from the Septuagint,
yes,
as all of his quotes prove,
yes,
used the phrase to describe the temple rituals,
okay,
that the Septuagint used. The works of the law,
mm-hmm,
means the rituals.
Yes.
It,
yes,
doesn't mean the law and the effecting of the law itself.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So the context, typically the antinomians ignore the context of the passages they quote from, okay, and they selectively choose passages which, out of context, seem to say that the law itself has been abolished when Paul is actually talking about certain elements of the law, such as the rituals.
Right, and there's a greater context here also, beginning with verse 5:17, because it's the first time that the Old Testament is explicitly referred to,
okay,
in Matthew chapter 5.
Okay.
But I mean, it pertains to the entire chapter,
sure,
because we've already seen that the first 16 verses of Matthew 5 are all quotes or allusions to the Old Testament.
That's right.
And
yes.
In Matthew chapter 5:17, we see the law or the prophets. In Matthew chapter 5:19, we see one of these commandments. In 5:21, it starts, you have heard that it had been said of or to the ancients, meaning the patriarchs of Israel.
Right.
In Matthew 5:27, you have heard that it has been said.
Mm-hmm.
In Matthew 5:33, again you have heard that,
yes,
it has been said to the ancients.
Yes.
In Matthew 5:38, you have heard that it has been said. In,
yes,
Matthew 5:43, you have heard that it has been said. These are constant references,
yes,
to the law and the prophets.
Right.
The entire cultural context here insists that Yahshua is speaking only to, by, for, and about the children of Israel.
Right, because only
the children of Israel ever heard any of these things.
That's right.
Nobody else heard any of,
that's,
these,
right,
things.
And therefore, you know, because he's speaking to a multitude, the non-Israelite aspect of the multitude, they don't know what he's talking about.
They have no idea what he's talking about.
That's right.
And they're excluded.
That's right.
There's Psalm 147, 19 and 20. He showeth his word unto Jacob, his statutes and judgments unto Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He has not dealt so with any nation.
That's right.
As for his judgments, they have not known them.
Mm-hmm. And they still don't know them, do they?
Absolutely not.
They still don't know them. And they never will, because their genetics is incapable of putting them into practice.
Absolutely.
Okay? That's why he created us, so that we would put them into practice. And if it weren't for the Jews messing up everything we ever try to do, we would have done this long ago, right? I'm going to jump to Colossians chapter 3 because I want people to understand that Paul is not anti-law, okay? I'm going to quote chapter 3, verses 5 through 13. Mortify, therefore, your members, which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry, for which things sake the wrath of God comes on the children of disobedience. Okay?
Those people that weren't supposed to understand the parables.
Right, right. So the wrath of God is coming upon those people who do these things. This is what Paul is teaching, folks. He's not teaching that the law has been abolished. In the which you also walked some time when you lived in them. But now you also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not to one another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds and have put on the new man, which is renewed in the knowledge after the image of him that created him. Where there is neither Greek nor Judean, or Judahite preferably, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is in all and in all. Okay, isn't he talking here? You know, he's totally confirming that we should not commit these sins, and that the distinction he makes in verse 11 here, which is the last, let me quote it again. Where there is neither Greek nor Judean, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond or free, but Christ is all and in all. Isn't he simply referring to the Israelites of the dispersion?
That my contention with the translation would be that whether Christ is a subject or an object here.
Okay.
And it's clearly an object.
Okay.
And it should say where one is not Greek and Judean.
Yes.
Circumcision and uncircumcision. Barbarian, Scythian, slave, or free, but altogether and in all ways anointed.
Uh-huh.
Meaning all these people were the children of Israel.
Right.
I mean, Paul's talking about Dan and Dorian Greeks, who were Israelites at the dispersion, as compared to the Judeans, who were Israelites whose ancestors returned to Jerusalem with Ezra and Nehemiah. And he's comparing the uncircumcised put off Israelites with
the
circumcised Israelites who kept the law.
Yeah.
And the barbarians are the Parthians or the Phoenicians.
Or the Germans.
The Scythians are the Germans.
Okay.
And all of these peoples describe dispersed Israel.
Yes.
Notice there's no Egyptian or Ethiopian here.
Right. Right.
There's no Arabian
or Mongol or Khazar.
Oh yeah, there's
or Edomite.
No.
Yeah, there's no Edomite here
either. No Edomians, right?
Yes. Okay. So Paul is number one in these passages teaching that we should not sin, and number two, he's specifying the Israelites of the dispersion as well as the Judeans. Judahites who are living in Judea, okay? Isn't that what the context is here?
Absolutely. And the context of Paul's message is to take the message of redemption to the dispersed of the Israelites.
Right, because the uncircumcised were redeemed as well as the circumcised. Isn't that what he's trying to get? Isn't that the point he's trying to get across?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Okay. Now, let me just two more verses. Let me jump to verses 23 through 25. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that the day that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve Yahshua Messiah, but he that does wrong shall receive for the wrong which he has done, and there is no respect of persons. Okay? So you are going to get what you deserve. He doesn't say that it doesn't matter what you do. He says you're going to get what you deserve according to the law, and there's no respect of persons. Now, what does that no respect of persons mean again?
I have a couple of caveats with this verse.
Okay.
Okay. My translation, and I don't even quote the King James New Testament anymore. I have no use for it.
Yeah, okay.
Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you would do, work heartily as for the prince or as for Christ and not for men.
Yes.
Knowing that from the prince or Christ, you shall recover the return of the inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Greek says. Hmm. Not receive the reward.
Yeah, okay.
Recover the return.
Okay, yes, okay.
He's talking to dispersed Israel. He's not talking to anybody else.
You will get your inheritance. You will get your inheritance. Okay.
Right. You'll recover. In other words, there aren't any strangers that are going to receive a reward.
Right.
You know, this is to Israelites of the dispersion who were so-called lost, the lost Israelites Christ came for, and that's who Paul's bringing his message. That language is very important because receive the reward, that's universalist language, and that's not what the Greek says.
That's right.
The Greek says recover to return.
Okay.
That's very exclusivist language.
Yeah, and recover is a totally different concept from, you know, being brought in as under the adoption, which is another false teaching.
Well, they get away with that false teaching because they take a word that means recover and translate it receive.
That's right. That's right.
They wouldn't get away with that false teaching if they didn't mistranslate half the words.
Yeah, you know, I want to go out and slap all those guys because they have butchered the New Testament with their false translations.
Well, okay. They've generalized a lot of words
that
can't be generalized.
That's right. Exactly. Okay, let's get back to Matthew.
Well,
all right,
let's know what you wanted to know about respect of persons.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
I translate that word everywhere it appears. The word means it means respect of the stature of persons.
Okay. Yeah, not their race.
And the definition, I mean, the be-all to end-all argument, to end all arguments about that word, read James chapter 2.
Okay.
Because he defines it.
Okay.
Don't respect the people that come into your assembly dressed in fancy clothes with gold rings on their fingers.
Right.
And he uses the same word in reference to them.
Yeah.
It's respect of the societal status of persons.
Yeah, and dangling dollar bills before the judge.
Well, right. And James says that we shouldn't treat the rich any differently because they're
right.
The ones that bring us to judgment.
Right. In other words, as we say here in America, justice is blind.
Well, that's the
be.
Idea of the phrase.
Yes.
In the Declaration of Independence,
right.
That all men are created equal.
And
if
there's
you look
no
at the other writings of Thomas Jefferson and the other of the Founding
right.
Fathers,
yes.
You'll see that it means all men are created equal in the eyes of the law.
Yes.
It means the same thing that James chapter 2 is saying. Don't favor the rich.
Yes.
Like this kike in Hollywood that killed this girl.
Right.
Spectre or whatever.
Oh,
his
yeah.
Name.
Yeah.
There's a perfect example of a rich man that finally justice was achieved and he's in prison.
That's right.
But how long did that take?
Yeah, it took
How
forever.
Long did his money keep him out of prison?
That's right. Absolutely. And so therefore, we are supposed to seek justice. And when money is involved, we are to utterly disregard the fact that the rich... You know, and obviously our legal system is totally flawed in favor of the rich. And Yahweh hates this legal system, and it's going to be abolished. It will be abolished, okay? All right, let's continue with Matthew chapter 5, verse 20. For I say to you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. In other words, before I get your opinion, my opinion of this verse, unless you exceed the religion of Judaism, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven.
Well, right. But some people may interpret this to mean that it's practically impossible to enter into the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
But in reality, reading Matthew chapter 23, for instance,
yes.
Joshua was making a public example of these leaders at the time.
That's right.
And their righteousness was virtually non-existent.
It wasn't. Exactly.
He's making an example of
right.
them.
Right. This is a cut against the Jews. That's
yeah.
what it is. It's an absolute cut against the Jews. And, of course, the Judeo-Christians don't even get this. Because they think the Jews are Israel.
Right. And if you read Matthew 23 and then go back and read this, you scratch your head thinking, well, the scribes and Pharisees have
yeah.
no righteousness.
Yeah, right. They have none at all. They're just plain evil. Judaism is Satanism wearing the mask of Moses. Okay, verse 21. You have heard that it was said by them of old time, you shall not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. Of course they will. Verse 22, but I say to you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause, that's a different context here, because he includes without a cause, shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, or you fool, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Okay, what are these two verses about?
Well, you really have me looking right now. You have me looking for Matthew 5:22 in my Greek manuscript.
Okay.
Because those words, without a cause,
yes,
they don't appear in my translation.
Wow.
And that means that they don't belong to the oldest manuscripts.
Okay.
If something's not in my translation, the only reason why I would leave it out is because it's not in the oldest manuscript.
My goodness. All right.
And,
okay.
And that it says, he who would, but I say to you that each being angry with his brother shall be subject to judgment.
Right.
Period.
Okay.
It doesn't
okay.
say without a cause.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that phrase, now it's not in italics here.
And it's not in the Greek of the NA27.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
And it says, okay, without a cause, the word is IK, it's one word, and it means vainly, basically.
Okay.
Okay? And it appears in the Codex Bizei.
All right, all right.
Which is commonly known as D.
Okay.
In the NA27 and other scholarly documents that refer to the ancient
okay.
codices. And that's a 5th century manuscript that has a great number of departures from the Codex Sinaiticus and
okay.
the Codex Vaticanus and even the Codex Alexandrinus.
Okay.
The Codex Bizei has a great number of interpolations in the scripture.
Okay.
And it appears
okay.
in the 5th century. However, there are, you know, the Vaticanus and Sinaiticus and the Codex Ephraemceri are all 5th and 4th century manuscripts.
All right.
There are many older manuscripts, and this word appears in none of them.
Right. Interesting.
Okay?
Interesting.
And
okay.
the Textus Receptus picked it up evidently
okay.
from some medieval manuscripts that got it from the Codex Bizei.
Okay. Okay. So, in other words, there's an interpolation here which is unnecessary, doesn't really add anything to the meaning. Is that's what you're
well,
saying,
it
right?
does change the meaning. To be angry with your brother and to be angry with your brother without a cause are
yes.
two drastically different things.
Right, right.
Now, there's a papyri, and it's commonly known as Papyri 64, and it's dated to circa 200 A.D.,
okay.
which contains this verse, and that word is not there.
Okay.
So the words found in the King James, without a cause, do not belong in this verse.
And they're not italicized, so there's no clue that
well,
they have
well,
been
they're
added.
Not italicized because they did appear in the Greek manuscripts
oh.
which the
oh.
King James translators used.
Okay.
But they
I
weren't
see.
The best manuscripts.
All right. Okay.
You know, those manuscripts that the King James translators used are built on a tradition of Erasmus and Elzevir and Stephanus, who were all 14th, 15th, and 16th century scribes, basically, monks and priests. And they didn't
yes.
make the greatest decisions, and they didn't
right.
use the best manuscripts. And Erasmus, by his own confession,
okay,
okay, indirect confession, I mean, he told us what his sources were,
yes.
and we know that they're poor sources.
Right, right.
And
he's Catholic, too.
in other words, Erasmus includes those verses in 1 John about the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Okay.
Which Clifton Emmaheiser is about to release a paper on.
Yeah, they've been added. Yeah.
And they've clearly been added.
Yeah.
And Erasmus follows them and cites his sources, and he made all kinds of mistakes with the manuscripts.
Really?
But,
very good.
You know, whether or not those mistakes are purposeful is another story.
Yes.
You know, he
yes.
may have simply used the tools that were the best that he thought he could find at
sure.
the time.
Sure, sure, sure. Okay. All right. So, in any case, the gist of this matter is given to us in the next few verses. So let me continue here. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has anything against you, leave there your gift before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother. Let me emphasize the word brother here, okay, twice. First, be reconciled to your brother. and then come and offer your gift, not your grift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and you be cast into prison. In other words, if you have something against your brother, and that's the context here, your Israelite brethren, then you deal with them face to face. And if that doesn't work, only then, should you, go to, to the others, to the judges, et cetera, et cetera. Isn't that what Yahshua Messiah is saying here?
Right. What he's saying, if one of your kinsmen, if one of your fellow Israelites, hey, where's my $10, you owe me? Just give him the $10.
Yeah.
If
right.
he says, hey, you broke my such and such, and or you have to return it, just give it to him.
Right, right.
Because the consequences are always a lot worse.
Yes.
It's always harder to argue with your brother
right.
than it is to just give it to him.
Right, right. And then you raise contentiousness, and you get angry with each other. And, that's actually going to be covered very shortly in the next few verses, because another main verse that has been misunderstood is coming right up, okay? But here, the next couple of verses deal with divorce and adultery. So let's continue here. Verse 26, verily I say to you, you shall by no means come out of there till you have paid the othermost farthing. So in other words, if you don't try to reconcile with your brother, and you try to use other means, and you get angry with each other, and things tend to get blown out of proportion and get worse, as you just said, isn't it just better, if the matter is small, just take care of it right away. Just take care of it, because Yahweh will reward you in any case for, being forthright, honest, and just with your brother, right? Isn't that the
Absolutely.
Case?
Absolutely.
Yes. But isn't there also something else going on here? Because we're in the transition period here where we're going from the rituals of the law to the covenant of mercy, okay? And so at this point in time, if you are bringing your offering to the altar, which is a ritual of the law, okay, and your brother has something against you, Jesus is saying, put that offering down, forget about it for the time being, and be right with your brother.
Well, right, and he's telling us that the mercy and the forgiveness of our brother or the satisfying of their needs
yes.
is more important than the offering.
Yes, and so isn't he setting us up for the new covenant right here?
Well, in a way, yes, you could say that, definitely.
Yes. Okay, all right, very
because
good.
Because the Pharisees were, oh, no, you got to go give the sacrifice.
Yeah, of course, because that's their job, or that's the job they've assumed for themselves. And therefore, the lawyers would get cut out of the profits, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, verse 27.
Well, that's another truth. That's another thing that, aspect that is fresh, is that when brethren have matters with each other, the Edomite lawyers get rich.
That's right.
And we should, Paul explains at great length in 1 Corinthians, that we shouldn't be taking each other to court.
Right.
Because there's no way in an Edomite-controlled court that we're ever going to get justice.
That's right. Our people are finding that out right now. That's right. Okay. Verse 27. You have heard that it was said by them of old time, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whosoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Well, what do you make of these two verses?
Well, lust is evil. Lust is the downfall of many a good man, and
mm-hmm.
I've experienced that in my own life.
Right.
Lust is a horrible thing.
Okay.
And what he's saying is that if you're lusting after a woman, you've already committed adultery.
Yes, yes. So you should just put that out of your mind. Especially if she's already married, just put that out of your mind and go about your business, okay? Verse 29, and if your right eye offend you, pluck it out and cast it out from you, for it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish and not that your whole body should be cast into hell. And if your right hand offend you, cut it off and cast it from you, for it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish and not that your whole body should be cast into hell. So obviously, if you've got a specific problem, you should deal with that and don't let it destroy your soul.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, your right eye is, you know, immediately lusting after the woman is spoken
right.
about. And then he's talking about your eye offending you.
Right.
Well, keep it in your head.
Right, yeah, and don't be touching things you ain't supposed to touch.
Right, and it's a difficult thing, but
yeah.
There's,
oh, yeah.
There's no,
tell me about it.
Yeah, but we have to learn that it's important to control it.
That's right. Okay, Southern California, you have a comment or question?
Yes, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Anyway, I heard you guys talking about nations or nationalities.
Yes.
And to my understanding, nationality or nation, they come from the same derivative or root.
Mm-hmm.
They come from the Latin word natus, which means birth.
Okay, so that would mean that if you have a nation, it would be one kind of people.
Right.
Well, a nation is supposed to, the definition of a nation is a homogeneous group of people with a common origin and a common history, a common culture, and a common experience.
Yeah.
Okay,
and that's
so
what
now
a nation is. A nation grows out of a family. It's a racial aspect to the word nation.
Right.
America is not a nation. That is Jewish propaganda.
Yeah.
America.
I asked that question. Would America be considered a nation anymore?
No.
Well, America was properly never a nation. It was founded as a federation of states that each individual state was a nation.
Yes.
So the federalism, America is an empire by definition. It always has been. But at least those states, those member states, were racially homogenous with each other.
Right.
However, America became an empire when the slaves became citizens.
Right.
The 14th Amendment officially made America an empire. Because the definition of an empire is a supreme government that rules over more than one nation of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Negroes, not being of the same nation as the natural born citizens,
the whites, yeah.
When they were ordained citizens, that automatically made America an empire. America's been an empire ever since the 14th Amendment was ratified.
Okay, now this is what I want to find out, and what I'm looking at is we originally a nation, you know, somewhat, and then you just now shared how it was sort of destroyed, and then we have this flood of other nations, meaning other nationalities,
people, yes,
coming in against us. Now, to show you that it's a war, for instance, under the hate crime, they had 50 blacks back east of the north that went to some white people, called them racist names, beat them up, did all kinds of things. Matter of fact, this was on one of the talk shows today. And then his talk show host went through other things with other nationalities, okay, that they're doing to white against white people.
Okay.
But now,
that's getting on here. Yeah.
There's no hate law for doing that. But if it's in reverse,
right,
then it's a hate law. So that.
Well, no. Whoa. Hold it right there. The hate laws in this country, if you actually read the Civil Rights Act, it's colorblind.
That's right.
However, it's the damned prosecutors that won't prosecute the reverse.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the fault is on the prosecutors.
Okay,
prosecutor to prosecute a Negro for a civil rights violation.
Right.
Well, they won't do it, like you just said, because this talk show host was going through showing, you know, basically he's saying it's, if it's white, you know, and if it's Christian, that, you know, then they don't do anything.
Well, that's true, but that's the personal choice of the United States Justice Department.
Right, because
well,
it's run by Jews. Yes.
It's not codified into the law
right.
that only minorities have civil rights.
Yeah.
But
okay.
It is the practice of our government that only minorities' civil rights are defended.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Wouldn't that
yeah.
be policy?
Right. Well, Gary,
it's policy, yes.
Gary, let's get back to the
well, the reason I brought that
five.
All up is because the law, as you were saying, has not changed.
No.
Okay? And Israel is supposed to be, this proves that who Israel is, because we are the only nationality or race that all these other races are coming against, and
right.
that this government who is foreign allows to happen.
We're the ones being, we're the ones hated. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so that would show
yes.
that there's law breaking going on out there, right and left.
Yes.
If a preacher of our people decides to preach against homosexuality, which they have already done, they can put him in jail for a hate crime.
Right, right. Okay, Dan from Georgia, you have a question or comment?
Hey, Eli, how are you doing tonight?
Hi.
Yeah, my question is on Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, the verse we just went over.
Okay.
And it's regarding adultery. Would it be safe to say that there is a dual meaning for in the word adultery? Because I know we've discussed several times, you know, when you look at the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, verse 13, and Exodus chapter 20, verse 17, where it's talking about thou shalt not commit adultery.
Right.
And then later on in verse 17.
Well, I can address this. I can address this pretty well.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, Dan, I don't mean to cut you off, but I know that what you're trying to say is that in the Old Testament, adultery means race mixing.
Yes.
And
right.
that is absolutely true. In the Old Testament, we have a Hebrew culture, and the word translated commonly as adultery in English does mean race mixing
mm-hmm.
in that Hebrew culture. However, that word was translated by the people who translated the Septuagint into a Greek word, which means to mix. I mean, the word moikos means, it comes from the verb mignumi, which means to mix.
Yes.
There's no doubt. However, in Greek culture, that word simply referred to the confusing of offspring.
Okay.
In other words, if a woman committed adultery, you wouldn't really know whose kid it was, her
right.
husband's or her boyfriend's. So that's how the Greeks used that word.
Okay.
And on that account, the apostles, realizing that, in Acts chapter 15, added a command against fornication. The Greeks knew that fornication was any form of illicit sex.
Okay.
And the Greeks counted sex with somebody as another from another tribe as fornication. And this can be proven, I can prove this from Greek writings. Okay, from secular Greek writings. The Greeks considered it fornication for somebody of one tribe to marry somebody of another tribe or
okay.
nation.
Now,
okay.
now, do you mean fornication? I mean fornication, like you said, with another tribe. You don't mean another tribe of Israel, do you?
No, well, no, I mean somebody of another race.
Someone of another race, right.
Let
okay.
me tell you something. In the Greek context, in ancient Greece, for a white person of one tribe to marry a white person of another tribe, the children would be considered bastards.
Right.
Okay?
So they were even more racist than we were. We are.
A specific historical example. Cyrus, the Persian king, was the son of a mother who was a princess of the Medes and a father who was a prince of the Persians. They were both of royal blood. They were both from absolutely Aryan white nations.
Right.
The Bible, Isaiah calls Cyrus a man of gold. Herodotus calls him a mule.
yeah.
And that's the Greeks was so strict racially
yes.
that they made the Hebrews look like liberals.
Right. So it's like a Britisher calling a German a bastard.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
The Greek ideas of race actually make the Hebrew Old Testament look liberal.
Okay.
Greece was not what these Jewish academics say it was.
Right. Okay.
Strabo marveled that in Egypt, people of different races lived in the same city.
Right. Now, but I think also Dan is kind of asking here, what about marriage as an institution? Is this verse addressing that as well? Because we're going to get to that in the next couple of verses.
Right here he's talking about any sex at all outside of marriage.
Okay. So this is talking about sex outside of marriage as well as race mixing. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's to be understood.
Okay.
I mean, there are commandments. The apostles, if you go look at Acts chapter 15, specifically added a commandment concerning fornication.
Okay.
And
okay.
Paul mentions that in relation to race mixing.
Okay.
In 1 Corinthians chapter 10.
All right. Well,
calls a race mixing incident from the Old Testament fornication.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
But technically speaking, though, when a man has sex with a woman, in Yahweh's eyes, they are married. There is no such thing as sex outside of marriage.
Well,
in Yahweh's eyes, right?
In Greek culture, I mean, I could make specific citations from the poems of Euripides and Aeschylus. In Greek culture,
which is
marriage
Israelite
happened
culture.
In a bed, not at an altar. Marriage happened in a bed.
Okay.
Okay? When you bed a woman and she's a virgin, she's your wife. If she's not a virgin, you're in trouble.
Okay.
She's somebody else's wife.
Right.
Right.
Okay. All right, well, that brings us to, let me quote verses 31 and 32, which are two of the most troublesome verses for Judeo-Christian interpretation in the Bible, verses 31 and 32. It has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say to you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. What do you have to say about these two verses, Bill?
So many thick-headed numbskulls want to use these two verses to support the idea that we could get divorced.
Okay.
And it's just not true. I mean, I'm going to quote Mark 10, verses 10 through 12.
Okay.
And in the house again, the students questioned him concerning this. And he says to them, whoever would put away his wife and marry another commits adultery against her. And if she, divorcing her husband, marries another, she commits adultery. In other words,
okay.
If she had to divorce her husband, she better not marry another because she commits adultery.
Okay.
If you, the only valid and the correct interpretation of Matthew 5, 31 and 32 is this. The only valid reason to divorce a spouse is if they have committed fornication.
Adultery.
Which is any form of illicit sex.
Okay, which would include race mixing and sex outside of marriage.
Well, right, but he makes a specific distinction. He says, except for reason of fornication.
Right.
In other words, he who puts away a wife,
okay.
Except for reason of fornication, makes her commit adultery.
Okay, okay. So what Jesus is saying here, there's no good reason except adultery.
Well, except for fornication, right. Any illicit sex is
yes.
Fornication.
Any illicit sex.
Which includes race mixing in the Greek,
okay.
In the Greek mindset.
Okay, all right. So,
hey, Bill and Eli, I've got one more question.
Okay.
On Matthew chapter 5, verse 28.
Okay.
Where Yahweh states, but I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. This word woman, according to the Strong's Concordance, is gune. And doesn't that specifically mean a married woman? I mean, I'm not saying it's okay to go around lusting after women, but isn't this referring specifically to another man's wife?
Well, you know, gune is usually used of a married woman in Greek. That's true. It's not used of a maiden, which is parthenos, which means virgin.
Okay.
Okay, a maiden or a virgin or somebody not married, a woman not married. However, I think that the point and the use of gune is general here, I believe, because when you look at a woman and lust at her, you don't know if she's married or not.
Right, right.
You don't know ahead of time if she's married or not.
Yeah. She no longer has that Mrs. on her chest, on her T-shirt.
Well, right.
Yeah.
And actually, in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, you could tell by looking at a woman whether or not she was married.
Okay.
They wore clothing that indicated their status all the
right,
time.
Right, right, right.
All
right.
Of their toga, I mean, men's togas indicated, well, it was by law that certain men could wear certain togas.
Okay. Okay.
And that was that you couldn't decorate your clothing and walk around a city.
Yes.
You couldn't do it. You had to wear a plain white toga.
Right, right.
And if you were a slave, you had to wear certain accoutrements.
Okay. All right, one more question here on verse 31, because there's two instances here, I think, of the same word. In one case, it's translated as put away, and another case, it's translated as divorce. What's going on here?
Well, you know, a lot of people want to make a distinction between the verb translated put away
okay.
and the noun translated divorce.
Okay.
But that distinction leaves a serious void in the Greek language.
Okay.
Because there's no verb that's equivalent to the word for divorce.
Okay.
The
and
word
in the Greek. Okay.
Right. There's absolutely no verb unless it's this verb translated put away.
Okay.
In other words, the Greeks didn't have an official distinction of the status of a divorcee
okay.
or somebody who is divorced.
Okay.
They use the word put away, meaning that that meant that was divorce.
Okay.
The act of putting a wife away, there's no divorce court.
Right, right. Okay.
You know, you put her away, so, and that's the equivalent of divorce in our society.
Right, right.
She's out. She's gone. She's divorced. Divorce means separation.
Yes, separation. Okay.
We have modern distinctions between separated people and married people and divorced
yes.
people. The Greeks didn't have those distinctions.
Okay, so now our distinction is that a court rules, and therefore it's divorce. If there's no court ruling, it's separation.
Right.
Yeah.
The Greeks and the ancient Hebrews just put them out of the house.
Right.
Beat it, woman.
Right.
And this and it was okay. I have to talk about this for a minute.
Okay.
In the Old Testament days, and what Christ is saying that because of the hardness of your heart,
yes,
we allowed Moses to have you write a bill of divorcement for a wife,
mm-hmm.
and this is why. Because if a woman was put out by her husband, she had nowhere to go.
Right.
And if she fell in with another man and the husband found out about it,
yes.
he could go have his wife that he put out
yes.
and the other man stoned to death
right.
for adultery.
Right.
So the woman and the other man had no protection against a false accusation of adultery.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, all the other man doesn't necessarily even have to sleep with her.
Right.
But just pity her and put her up in a room in his house.
Right, exactly.
Because she had nowhere to go.
Uh-huh.
And the husband's going to say, oh, my wife was in that man's house and I got three witnesses.
Right.
Oh, he's dead.
Exactly.
So his magnanimity brings him right to the judgment of death.
Yes. Right.
And the judgment is to be stoned to death.
Okay, so the writ of divorce, therefore,
protected the wife, and
yes.
it protected any man or any family that might feel sorry for her and take her in.
Yeah, right.
That's all that writing a divorcement was about.
Okay.
Was it was it signified that the husband actually right. freed her from the law
right.
of marriage, that he could not come back and seek any judgment
right.
against anyone
okay.
found with her.
So it's a public declaration saying that she is no longer my wife, and any man that associates with her cannot be accused of adultery.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the verb used to put away has the same signification that we would use of divorce.
Okay, so there's no real
today.
Distinction between put away and divorce.
Anybody who
group.
Tries to make a distinction between the two ideas that they're two different
concept.
Stages or concepts is just being silly.
Okay, so
it's
the
just
Greek
not knowing what they're talking
that.
About.
Okay, very interesting. Okay. All right, Dan, any further questions?
That's it for now. I'll keep quiet for a little while.
All right, well, I'll just leave you in the chat, okay? All right, very
okay.
good. Okay, now we get back to more general discussion here. Verse 33. Excuse me. Again, you have heard that it has been said by them of old time, of course, as you pointed out earlier, Bill, we're talking about our Israelite ancestors. We're talking about our culture. We're not talking about any other culture except Israelite culture. You shall not forswear yourself, but shall perform to the Lord your oaths. In other words, you shall not declare a false oath.
We shouldn't take an oath, period.
Right.
Because we're only bound to break them.
Right. And that's what verse 34 says. But I say to you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black, but let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these comes. And so never, don't make any promises you can't keep.
And I'm going to go, and Paul cites it also, Paul cites this passage. I mean, in his letters, he makes reference to the same thing. However, James says it explicitly in 5:12, but before all, my brethren, do not swear, not even on heaven, nor on the earth, nor any other oath.
Right.
And that's, it's,
yeah,
it's that we don't fall
right.
under false
right.
judgment.
Right.
Or we don't bind right. ourselves to something that we can't
Yeah,
keep.
Because when you make a promise, maybe at the time you made the promise, you were very sincere. But when the time came to fulfill on the promise, you may only have $2 left in your pocket.
Right. And the idea here is also an idea of humility.
Right.
Where God can foretell the future and say that he's going to do something and keep his word.
Yes. Yes.
But we can't.
Right. It's very hard.
No.
Yeah. And try as we may, circumstances change. And it's very hard to, you know, fulfill a promise, especially the further away in the future it is. And then circumstances always change. So it's just better to say, well, I will try.
I'll do what I can to get that to you. Yeah,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, but, you know, I can't guarantee it. Okay.
But I've had people that claim to be Christian identity actually try to bind me to oaths. And there is a gentleman in Wisconsin who was writing me in prison that I stopped writing and cited this passage in James 5:12. And I said, look, hey, you're an idiot.
Yeah,
and I cited the two passages because he was pushing me into something,
right.
into a commitment, and that was
yeah.
the response. And
right.
I haven't written him since. I haven't spoken to him in 3 years.
Right. Well, now there's a difference, of course, between having a binding agreement, let's say, as a business partnership, and you're bound by that, you know. And so, you know, that's something you can't get out of if you have a binding business agreement, okay. And if you break your part of the contract, you're legally bound. To fess up, you know, and put your money where your mouth is, you know. So that's why we're being told here, you know, don't do that. You know, just be honest, forthright, and just say to people, I can't do it right now. I'll do my best, you know. And don't make promises you can't keep.
It's even more important not to put our brethren in a position.
Yes.
In other words, to impose on them.
Right.
No,
right.
I can't impose. Are you going to promise me you're going to do this tomorrow?
Yeah,
do you
right.
swear you're going to do this tomorrow?
Yeah, right.
No. That's a terrible thing to do to one's brother.
That's right. Okay, very good. All right, verse 39. Oh, no, sorry, verse 38. You have heard that it has been said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you that you resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. And before you respond to this, let me just say, we are talking about brethren living together in the community. We're not talking about enemies attacking, storming the gates of your city, okay? We're talking about community relationships. We're not talking about people at war with each other.
Absolutely.
Okay?
This only talks about, this is only a message to the children of Israel.
Right.
Because they're the only ones that heard it, that it had been said.
Okay.
Nobody
right.
else heard that.
Yes, that's right.
You can't take Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, and in the next presidential election, you're a candidate, and just pull it out of your pocket and read it in San Antonio, and walk away without citing Lincoln or any. In other words, what I'm trying to say is it would be totally absurd to take such a speech in today's day and age in a different place.
Right.
Because it has absolutely no application
right.
to those people, those times.
Right.
It's totally out of its historical context.
Or recited in China, where they don't even have a word for freedom.
Or Negro.
Yes. Exactly.
or Negro slave.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
So.
It's totally out of its context.
Yes.
And you can't, when you read this speech at the Sermon on the Mount, he's talking to Israelites.
Yes.
And he's talking about Israelites,
okay,
about
so,
brethren. That's
okay,
all
so,
he's talking about.
So what do you make of this phrase, then, resist not evil? Isn't this really just talking about don't be quick to retaliate against your brother? Just hold your peace for a while and find out what, let's say, somebody accuses you falsely, and he's really angry at you and wants to punch you in the face and says, you did this, you dirty so-and-so, and you say, well, put up your hands. Oh, wait, I have no idea what you're talking about. Instead of getting angry with your brother, even though he's very angry with you, you just hold back and say, wait a minute, you know, give me a chance to explain, you know. Isn't this what's going on here?
Well, absolutely. You know, in other scriptures, and this all has to be taken in context, Christ says that if your brother has wronged you 70 times, seven times,
yes.
and says, I repent, you're to forgive him.
Yes.
But if your brother doesn't repent, that's a different story.
Right. 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 So we're not to retaliate. We're supposed to keep cool, stay cool, calm, and collected. Find out what's really going on. Don't get angry back at your brother, even though he's angry with you. And just hold your peace until you find out what's really going on. And,
well, absolutely.
Yes.
And in verse 40, it says, and to him desiring for you to be judged and to receive your cloak, give up to him also your shirt.
Yes.
In other words, if you're going to sue me and you're one of my kinsmen, I'm going to say, well, why are you going to sue me?
Yes.
You want this? Here, take it.
Right, right.
You know, it ain't no big thing. It's only
right.
a thing. Here,
yes.
take it.
And there may be circumstances where you can't prove your innocence. And, you know, everybody around you thinks you're guilty and you can't prove your innocence. So then just make things right. And, you know, Yahweh will reward you. Because, you know, it's better to do that than to get into a fisticuffs with your brother over a misunderstanding.
Well, absolutely. And somebody's asking, you know, let your brother beat you up or fight back.
No, not at all.
And the thing is that if you don't want to fight, just settle the argument with your brother.
Right, just settle it, yeah.
There won't be a need to fight.
Yeah, yeah. This is not talking about coming to blows. That's not what the context is here, even though the guy accusing you may be wanting to beat you in the head, you know. You don't want to let it get to that point, okay?
Right, and it won't get to that point as long as you are
yes.
a just and righteous person.
That's right. Yes. And so we are supposed to stay cool, calm, and collected, and, you know, and always act out of our own righteousness and never lose our sense of righteousness, okay, and give in to retaliation or revenge. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, okay? We aren't supposed to let ourselves taste that. Okay?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
But none of this can be taken to mean that when some Negro tries to stick a knife in your face,
right.
that you shouldn't
oh.
do something about and
right.
defend yourself.
Right.
You
because,
better defend yourself.
Because the context is Israel. It's not talking about other races coming in and attacking us. We
absolutely.
Are absolutely, most have to defend ourselves in that case.
We're talking
absolutely.
About sheep here, where you
right.
shoot the wolf.
Right, because we're trying to establish our society, our just society, and this has nothing to do with other races coming in and disrupting our society.
Absolutely
yeah.
not.
Yeah, and if they try to do that, then we have absolute justification for retaliating against them. Absolutely.
You better retaliate.
That's right. You better. Isn't that why Jesus told the apostles, take a sword with you?
Exactly, and that's a different context.
Yes.
And if we don't examine the context of what's being said, I mean, the churches don't do that, and they lead people
not.
Off in all kinds of error.
Yeah, and that's
and they
why...
speak out of both sides of their mouths all the time
yeah.
because they refuse to recognize the racial and national issues, which
yes.
are the heart of the matter.
Yeah, and that's why they never quote that passage where Jesus tells the apostles, take your sword with you. Okay? They never quote that one. Okay?
No, they never quote 90% of the New Testament.
That's right. Okay.
They quote 10% and swear it's a different God from the Old Testament.
It's a different Bible. Verse 41, and whosoever shall compel you to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him that asks you, and from him that would borrow of you, turn you not away. And, okay, what do you make of these last
Well, when
two?
Your brother wants something from you, you should go out of your way to give him even more than what he wants.
Okay.
That's the message here.
Yes, yes. Now, isn't there implicit in statements like this, that Yahweh will provide you, because if you are merciful, the law is this. If you are merciful to your brother, Yahweh will be merciful to you.
If you're living to serve the people of Yahweh with a true heart, then you're going to have what you need.
Yes.
You're going to be rewarded. There's no,
yes.
you shouldn't worry, oh, Eli, I can't
Am I ever going to get
to the gambling hall. I can't walk 2 miles with you today.
Am I ever going to get the $10 back that I gave to Bill?
Yeah, well, that's the way it should be.
And then basically Jesus is telling us, don't worry about it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And if your brother needs something, give him what he needs and
don't
give
worry.
Him more.
Yeah, give him more. And Yahweh will give you more. That's the way it's supposed to work. Okay? Verse 43. You have heard that it has been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which spitefully use you and persecute you. Of course, we're talking about, in our case today, the Judeo-Christians, the good white people who have been blinded by the Jewish propaganda and hate us and spitefully talk about us, telling us that we're evil when actually we're the only righteous people on the planet. And they hate us, and they're our enemies, aren't they?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're our enemies, they're the enemies of God, and they're the wolves among the sheep.
Yes.
And we are too. I mean, Paul had no problem recognizing them and identifying them as children of the devil.
Yes.
It's recorded several times.
Yes.
Why do we have a problem with it?
Yes. So what we're talking about here is enemies of our own race. We're to love those, and, you know, in spite of how blinded they are, we're to love them anyway, but this has nothing to do with loving Jews.
I have a few comments on this phrase that's translated neighbor.
Okay.
Okay? The phrase translated neighbor by the King James Version of the Bible, it doesn't mean somebody that just happens to live nearby. It doesn't mean that the alien that just buys the house next door, now he's your neighbor, so you have to be nice to him and love him because he's your neighbor. You know, it can surely be demonstrated that in Palestine and throughout the known world, the Greco-Roman world, one's neighbor was the person that lived next door was expected to be of your own tribe.
Uh-huh.
Okay? The word in the New Testament here is ton plesion. And it's always translated neighbor in the King James Version.
Okay.
But I always translate it one near to you.
Okay.
Okay? And first, at Acts 7:27, an account of Exodus 2:11 to 14, an Israelite is referred to as a ton plesion or a neighbor in relation to another Israelite.
Okay.
But he's not referred that way in reference to the dead Egyptian.
Right.
This is where Moses, who's actually an Egyptian by culture, by his upbringing, goes to visit the children of Israel and sees that an Egyptian is whipping them, and he kills the Egyptian.
Right.
Moses killed the Egyptian.
Right, right.
Now, Moses understood that the two Israelites were neighbors. That word ton plesion was used to describe this account. But the Egyptian wasn't described as being their neighbor.
Yes.
Now, how did Moses know that these two men lived next to each other?
Right.
He could only have known that the two men had a tribal relationship. He didn't know where they lived.
Yes.
Now, some may think this is conjectural, but this is the circumstance.
Yes.
At Matthew 5:43, Yahshua is credited with the words, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy." Now, what meaning would the saying have if one's enemy, as is often the case today, lived in a house next door?
Yeah, right. And was your brother-in-law.
Right. Now, it means nothing at all. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
It's our understanding of that word plesion, or as the King James translates it, neighbor, which is screwed up, okay? And in Romans 13:10, the King James has love to an evil neighbor does not work.
Yes.
But it really says have love for him near to you who does not practice evil.
Right.
Okay, they really got the subject.
Oh, yeah, they got that totally messed up. Yes.
In that verse.
Yes.
Okay? And it's him near to you who does not practice evil that you should love.
Right, right.
Okay?
Okay.
Not the guy that lives next door.
Yeah.
Because that he's not necessarily somebody near to you.
Yes.
Because the relationship is not necessarily geographical.
Right.
And an examination of Scripture proves that.
Yes, yes.
Okay? It's somebody near to you in relationship.
Right.
Like Moses identified the two Israelites.
Right.
As
and
neighbors.
Therefore he smote the Egyptian, yes.
Because by their dress at that time in Egypt, he would have easily been able to distinguish the Hebrews from
yes,
the Egyptians.
That's right. That's right.
Immediately, on sight.
Yes.
Because they wore different clothes.
Yeah, like you can distinguish Michael Jackson from Britney Spears.
Now, in the original Hebrew,
yes.
Okay, the word is also found at Leviticus 9:18. It's Strong's number 7453 in the Hebrew dictionary, and it comes from Strong's number 7462. Which means, as defined by Strong, an associate, more or less close, and Strong lists the AV translations of the word as brother, companion, fellow friend, husband, lover, or neighbor. Okay? But the root of the word is defined by Strong as this, a primitive root, which means to tend a flock. So right away we know it only pertains to the sheep, i.e. to pasture it, to
mm-hmm.
graze, generally, or by extension to associate with as a friend.
Yes.
And it seems to me, therefore, that the word plaisian can only mean a fellow sheep.
Right, right.
Okay? A sheep and a wolf are not neighbors to each other.
Right.
They cannot be.
Right.
I don't care how close they live to each other.
Even if the wolf is inside the pen.
Absolutely.
Right. Yes. A couple of interesting questions on the chat room board here. One RP wants to know which verse is it where your adversaries will be those of your own household. I believe that's somewhere in Matthew as well.
And I'd have to. I don't have the New Testament verses memorized.
But,
sorry.
But certainly, you know, those of our own household of being Israelites, you know, we have to love them, even though they may be our enemies. You know, your enemy may be your daughter, your son, your wife, your stepsister. It could be anything like that. We have to treat them with love and not write them off. We always have to approach them as potentially coming back into the fold, okay?
Well, right, and, you know, I have people in my own family, and my own children despise me for a lot of my positions.
Right.
Because I spent 14 years in prison, and I wasn't there to see their education.
Right.
To guide them through their education. So they're products of the public school system.
Right.
So they are clones of the New World Order.
Yes, that's right.
And that's exactly what they are. That's what products of the public school system are today.
Yes.
And
yes.
And their mother didn't know any better to teach them better because she's the same way herself.
Yes.
And that's just the way it is. And they hate me for my positions.
Right.
And that's just tough.
Right, right.
And that's that a man's enemies are those of his own house, of his own family.
And all we can do is be true to the word. That's all we can do. You know,
I'm evil, I'm a hater, and that's the way it is.
Exactly.
And
we're hated because we're doing what the Bible tells us to do.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
And that's very common, and it's my personal experience, but I also know that it's the personal experience of most other two seed line identists.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and it's especially tough for us men in this movement because our women aren't really hip to it yet.
Well, right, but you know, I got to say something for the women. I'm sorry. I have to
okay.
I know a whole bunch of women identists. Some of them are listening to this program right now.
Yes.
They're the most excellent people in the world.
Yes.
And their husbands are not even Christians.
Right.
They're just, you know, they
Yeah, or they're Jews.
I mean, I mean, they're apathetic at least.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're apostates or they're apathetic.
Yes.
And they didn't know any better when they got tied up in these, or whatever the situation is that they got married to these guys. But.
Yes.
It's just the way it worked out.
Right. Well, yeah, and we have to understand, too, many of us, in my own case, and Greg Howard has the same experience. You get married before becoming identity, and then you get the face, and then your wife doesn't want to go along with it. Okay.
Well, right, and they're they're listening to this program right now, and it's the opposite. Their wives don't go along with it, and it's hurting their marriages.
That's right. That's right.
And that's just the way it is.
That's the way.
I've come to divide father against brother-in-law and son against daughter, whatever he's
exactly.
You know.
And we have no choice but to continue in the true faith. And just pray for our spouses, for our children, for wives, etc., that eventually they will come to see the light and join us.
I don't know too many Methodists, Baptists, Episcopalians, or Southern Evangelicals that have this problem.
Right. Right.
So that tells me that we have a sign.
Yes.
That we're teaching the truth.
That's right.
Because our message divides families.
That's right. That's absolutely right. That's right. Pat has an interesting question about where did Seth get his wife? Because he obviously had to have a white woman.
I would have to ask him to go read the overview section on Christogenia. It's not complete.
Okay.
However, I do get into that in Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2 of the Christogenia overview of the Bible on my website.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of writing to do on it. But I do have the first three or four chapters of Genesis up there.
Yeah. Both Dan and Sword Brethren have kind of presented the answer that I agree with, namely that in Genesis 1, 26 and 27, the white race is being formed or created. And in Genesis chapter 2, a specific member of the white race, namely the man Adam.
Well, that's basically what I stayed on.
Oh, okay.
I phrase it a little differently, but that's basically what I stayed on
my
website.
Words, there were already white people here. And that's where Seth got his woman from.
Well, right, and I have to say this, okay?
Yeah,
every other species was not meat for Adam to take as a wife.
That's right.
Okay, we have to take it where we have voids in the Old Testament story in the scripture.
Right.
We have to accept the fact that we're not told everything.
Yes.
That we can't know everything in this age.
Yes.
And it's I understand that we have an innate desire to learn everything and to have all the answers.
Yes. Sure.
But we just have to take it on faith that Seth and the other men of the time had legitimate wives.
Right.
Because every time in the Old Testament that somebody has an illegitimate wife, it's clearly he's clearly excoriated, and it's clearly mentioned.
And excluded from the tribe.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. Okay. You there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I lost it for a second there. Okay, we got just a few more verses to finish off Matthew chapter 5, okay? So verse 45, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust, and of course, we're talking about the children of your Father, which we were just talking about. Genesis chapter 2, the Adamites are the only children of Yahweh.
Absolutely. And actually, out of all of the Adamites, and that's true. I mean, Paul mentions it in Acts chapter 17, and Luke calls Adam the son of God in Luke chapter 3:1, or 3:31, I think. I'm not disputing that at all. It's absolutely true. However, in Scripture, only the children of Israel are recognized as the children of Yahweh.
Yes.
And that is in Deuteronomy 14:1.
Yes, because the covenants passed through us exclusively. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So even out of the entire white race, the other Adamic tribes did not, they have the distinction. I mean, it's a physical fact that can't be denied.
Yeah, exactly.
However, it's the position of sons,
mm-hmm.
mistranslated as adoption,
right?
Which is what makes one have a rightful claim to being a child of Yahweh.
Yes. So in other words, the government, and I take Genesis 1:27 where it says to the white race exclusively is dominion to be given. But of course, we blew that. And we've been blowing it. And the Judeo-Christians are trying to continuously blow it.
The first time it was when Adam accepted a race-mixed child as his son.
Right.
That's the first time it was blown. And, and there you have it. Yahweh is not going to accept your racially impure children grandchildren or great-grandchildren, and he's surely not going to accept them at your beseeching.
That's right. That's right. And so this conflict that began at Genesis 3:15 is blowing, it's flaring up, just as Jesus said, it shall be as in the days of Noah, when the sons of the Elohim, raped the daughters of men. That means white men, the daughters of the white race. That's what that's talking about.
Well, it's the daughters of Adam in the scripture, yeah.
Yeah, and that's still going on today, folks. The churches are encouraging this, folks. Verse 46, for if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be you therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And we should therefore understand Yahweh's intentions for us. There's the only way you can have a relationship with God is to obey his law.
Well, absolutely. But only the children of Israel are given a law, and only the children of Israel are given the new covenant.
Yes, and only...
And here, we can't become confused over the difference between our enemies...
Yes.
...and the Satan, or the adversary.
Yes.
Which are the enemies of Yahweh and of Christ.
Yes.
And they're the enemies of our race.
Yes.
There's a huge difference between our personal enemies...
Yes.
Who may or may not be Israelites,
yes.
and his enemies, who would break his law and destroy his people
at every turn. And who are trying to destroy us and the society we're trying to create.
Right, and David set a perfect example. David says in Psalm 139, 21 and 22, do I not hate them, O Yahweh, that hate thee?
Yes.
In other words, David only hated the people that hated God.
That's right.
And am I not grieved with those that rise up against thee? I hate them with a perfect hatred. I count them my enemies.
Yes.
Now, David, most of his problems in his life were with Saul.
That's right.
He was being sought by Saul. But David never hated Saul.
No, he didn't.
And in fact, he even slew the man that killed Saul.
Right.
Now, most of us would be gleeful and reward that man.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay?
Yes.
But David said, who are you to kill Yahweh's anointed?
That's right.
And slew that man, had that man slain.
Right.
Now, that's the perfect example. David did not hate Saul, his Israelite enemy.
That's right.
Okay, but he hates the enemies of God.
Well, even though Saul hated him and tried to kill him several times.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, that's the perfect example. That's the godly example.
Yes.
David was a man after God's own heart.
Right.
He did not hate
his
Israelite enemies, but he hated the enemies of Yahweh.
And so when Jesus says, love thine enemies in Matthew chapter 5, he's using David as the example.
Right, and he's only talking about Israelites.
Right, exactly.
The Edomites are Yahweh's enemies, or they're among Yahweh's enemies.
We're not
to love them; we're to hate them.
Right. All right. We're to protect our culture against theirs.
Absolutely.
That's what it's all about.
And what we've done is we've let them infiltrate our culture.
Yes.
And overturn it.
Yes. So I only have one more thing to say on this subject, which is that the Judeo-Christian attempt to convert non-Israelites and non-whites to Christianity is the most perverted excuse for religion on this planet, because all it has done is create false Christianity in which not even the white Christians can perform their duty under Yahweh's law. And what has happened is that every Judeo-Christian denomination that has gone into converting non-whites to Christianity has turned to homosexuality, perversion, voodoo, feminism, you name it. They have all lowered their standards far below the standards of the Bible and have created a new religion which is just as pagan-oriented as what the Israelites were practicing in 745 B.C.
Maybe even more so.
They are apostates, all of them. The entire Judeo-Christian world is nothing but a shadow. It's not even close to what the true religion is. It's perversion. And they think they're so much better than we are. That's the irony of it.
Absolutely.
Because we're racist, they think they're superior to us morally. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely amazing. And they're the ones who are actually morally wrong, and they just don't get it. They just don't get it. All right. This has been a tremendous, I think anybody listening to the show today, not understanding that Matthew and the whole Sermon on the Mount and many other passages in Scripture prove that the reason that Yahshua Messiah spoke in parables was so that only the Israelites would get the message and the non-Israelites would not understand. Isn't that, once you understand that about the Sermon on the Mount, then you cannot generalize it to the whole world as the Judeo-Christians do.
Right. We'll see that often in the Gospel of Matthew, as
right.
we profess.
Right. Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. I hope you got the point that this Sermon on the Mount is intended only to be our moral imperative among our brethren. We're not supposed to take this term of enemies to being those who are trying to kill us. That's not what this is talking about. It's talking about our next-door neighbors, our white brothers and sisters, with whom we have disagreements. That's what it's talking about. It's not talking about a war situation where somebody's trying to kill you and you throw down your sword and just let them run you through with the sword. That's not what the Sermon on the Mount is trying to teach you, okay? And those Judeo-Christians who are trying to tell you that's what it's saying, they're absolutely dead wrong. They're liars, deceivers, and fools, and worse. Many of them are just plain deceivers. So, on that score, I think we did justice today to Matthew chapter 5. Thank you, Bill, for joining me this evening. And then next week we'll pick up with Matthew chapter 6, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, and praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you for listening, everybody. And tomorrow we'll be on again with Yahweh's Covenant People at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And then on Sunday, I'm going to do a show about the genealogy of the Edomites. Who are the Edomites in the world today? That's going to be the subject for Sunday's show, Voice of Christian Israel. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening, for your comments and suggestions. And keep praying for your brothers and sisters so they wake up to the truth of the Holy Scriptures. Praise Yahweh. Yahweh bless everybody.